This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation, September 16th, 2011. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, famous last words. In the September issue of Poetry Magazine, there's a portfolio of some uncollected poems by Anthony Hecht. And on the Poetry Magazine podcast, you can hear the editors of the magazine discuss Anthony Hecht. So I thought it was a good moment to listen to one of the poems that built Hecht's reputation as one of the most morally astute voices of his generation. I'm joined on the phone from Boston University by Christopher Ricks, a literary critic who has written about Hecht in his recent book, True Friendship. Now, Christopher, when we were going over which poem to talk about on this podcast, you chose More Light, More Light, and you said it's the poem that most shows his genius, what in him not only deserves to, but will endure. We were corresponding by email. Now, without getting into the details before we have a chance to listen to Hecht's reading, why is it that you think that this poem will last?
Because it has a subject of appalling weight and depth, that is the Holocaust, and because it is never presumptuous, never self-advertising in its sensitivity, simply harrowing and unforgettable.
Yeah, and I have to warn listeners, if they're looking for uplift from poetry, this is not the podcast to listen to because this is a unremittingly bleak poem. The recording of the poem that we have was made in 1971 at Harvard, and Hecht gave a very helpful introduction. Let's listen to a bit of that.
This poem contrasts two executions. The details of the first were taken from details of several executions that took place in England in the Renaissance, and the second is described as accurately as I could do it from a book written by a man who survived 5 years in the Buchenwald concentration camp during the Second World War.
The title, More Light, More Light, are the words that Goethe famously said moments before he died.
No one knows exactly what he intended to mean by them, and he may have meant something very innocent and unimportant indeed. But those who admire German culture and enlightenment like to believe that he was referring to something of that sort. His presence in the poem is an obscure and very slight one, but is important because prisoners who were sent to Buchenwald by train, as most of them were, got off at the nearest railroad station, which was Weimar, the great Goethe shrine, and had to march the rest of the way to the camp.
Now, Christopher, do you have anything to add to Hecht's introduction?
Well, only to say that it's both a title and an epigraph, because it's a quotation. It hovers above the poem as an epigraph might.
Okay, so first we hear about the execution in Renaissance England, then about an execution outside of Buchenwald. Here's Anthony Hecht reading More Light, More Light.
Composed in the tower before his execution, these moving verses, and being brought at that time painfully to the stake, submitted, declaring thus, I implore my God to witness that I have made no crime. Nor was he forsaken of courage, but the death was horrible, the sack of gunpowder failing to ignite. His legs were blistered sticks on which the black sap bubbled and burst as he howled for the kindly light. And that was but one, and by no means one of the worst. Permitted at least his pitiful dignity, and such as were by made prayers in the name of Christ that shall judge all men for his soul's tranquility. We move now to outside a German wood. Three men are there commanded to dig a hole in which the two Jews are ordered to lie down and be buried alive by the third, who is a Pole. Not light from the shrine at Weimar beyond the hill, nor light from heaven appeared. But he did refuse. A Luger settled back deeply in its glove. He was ordered to change places with the Jews. Much casual death had drained away their souls. The thick dirt mounted toward the quivering chin. When only the head was exposed, the order came to dig him out again and to get back in. No light, no light in the blue Polish eye. When he finished, a riding boot packed down the earth. The Luger hovered lightly in its glove. He was shot in the belly and in 3 hours bled to death. No prayers or incense rose up in those hours, which grew to be years, and every day came mute ghosts from the ovens, sifting through crisp air, and settled upon his eyes in a black soot.
That was Anthony Hecht reading More Light, More Light. Now, Christopher, in his introduction to the poem, Hecht said he was contrasting two executions. Why did he do this? What is he arguing, that the 20th century was crueler than the 16th century?
I think he wishes to do justice to two opposite truths. They're not simply half-truths, because they're entirely true. That is, there's a sense in which everything appalling that happens has happened before and will happen again. And there's another sense in which things do change. It's part of the agonizing subject matter of Robert Lowell's poems, that nothing has changed since the scaffolds flamed on Burning Troy. And we need to believe both of those things, as we need to believe two opposite proverbs. He needs the reminder that these appalling things have happened in the past, that they were not necessarily less horrible, they were differently horrible.
But there does seem to be that the later execution taking place outside of Buchenwald was worse, especially since there's not the comfort of poetry as there is in the first execution or of some kind of religious consolation. It does seem to imply that things got worse.
Yes, and it raises the question, though not, of course, when it uses these words, it's not talking about that comparison.
His legs were blistered sticks on which the black sap bubbled and burst as he howled for the kindly light. And that was but one, and by no means one of the worst.
So he will be able to think of worse ones back then than the one in which somebody was permitted, at least, his pitiful dignity. But there were appalling things like the death of Richard II that were not permitted, pitiful dignity and so on. So that, I mean, I think there's never any way out of that. I mean, it makes sense for human beings to believe plus ça change, plus c'est la même chose, but also to think that history, I mean, things have changed. Did September the 11th change everything? The answer, I think, to these questions is always yes and no. Then you try to specify those things. After all, there is within the terrible Nazi killings this extraordinary moment.
Three men are there commanded to dig a hole in which the two Jews are ordered to lie down and be buried alive by the third, who is a Pole. Not light from the shrine at Weimar beyond the hill, nor light from heaven appeared. But he did refuse.
Now, he was not able to maintain that refusal in the face of the prolonged torture, as it were, by the Nazi, and he was not able to maintain that refusal in the face of the collapse by the two Jews who were going to bury him alive.
A Luger settled back deeply in its glove. He was ordered to change places with the Jews. Much casual death had drained away their souls. The thick dirt mounted toward the quivering chin. When only the head was exposed, the order came to dig him out again and to get back in.
But it's not true that there was nothing other than bleakness. It's the most powerful sentence in the poem is, but he did refuse.
Yeah, he did refuse, but then there's shortly after that comes one of the most, what to me is the most powerful line in the poem, much casual death had drained away their souls.
It will have cost Anthony Hecht something to write. It's an extraordinary line, much casual death had drained away their souls, with a kind of pun on what it is to be a casualty. Casual death is the terrible casualties that are taken by this. From the beginning, I mean, the phrase that I use in writing about the poem is level, hideous equanimity.
No light, no light in the blue Polish eye. When he finished, a riding boot packed down the earth. The Luger hovered lightly in its glove. He was shot in the belly and in 3 hours bled to death. No prayers or incense rose up in those hours, which grew to be years, and every day came mute ghosts from the ovens, sifting through crisp air, and settled upon his eyes in a black soot.
Hecht had been criticized early in his career for being almost Victorian in his sort of decorative verse, and this seems to have totally stripped that away. And he's using the formality of his style to great effect here.
Well, I agree. And of course, then the deviations from the formality are all the more telling. That is, the rhymes are perfect rhymes until you get to the last two stanzas, where earth rhymes with death and where mute rhymes with soot. That's very different from time, crime, ignite, light, dignity, tranquility, whole, pole, refuse, Jews, chin, in. Those are all absolutely perfect. And then it goes askew, as it does with the extraordinary enjambment, when you get, and every day came mute ghosts from the ovens. The drama of that, it's not melodramatic, it's intensely dramatic. That's the moment in the poem when you get in a crossing over from one line to another like that. You don't get it elsewhere.
Well, let me get back to this question. Do you think the Poles' initial resistance to bury the Jews alive, do you think that was worth it?
Well, yes, I think it is worth it. That is, the poem gives it a lot of weight. That is, it's because it's only a third of the line and because of the way in which it uses, as it were, expletive did. But he did refuse.
Mm-hmm.
He received no supernatural backing to tell him you really shouldn't do this. No light from here, no light from there. But something. Now, he did not maintain it any more than King Lear in another tragedy maintains his terrific concern for the plight of the homeless and the poor and those who are suffering out in the rain. That does not stay with Lear, but it was a terrific achievement that it came to him at all.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I give a lot of weight to that, partly because of what you do when you say did.
Yeah.
And he reads, I think he reads it very well. he's a very compelling reader, utterer of the work, but he, in my opinion, compels a single pace for it. And I actually think it doesn't have simply a pace.
How do you mean that? You mean we read too fast, too slow?
He reads it basically all at the same speed.
Yeah.
It doesn't permit of bringing home in the uttering what happens to the word light when it becomes lightly.
Mm-hmm.
More light, kindly light, not light, nor light. The Luger hovered lightly in its glove. Now, that's very Shakespearean, because the pun is one which a sadist would gloat with. We've had light, we've had light, we've had light. But the poem isn't sadistic. So it's a little bit like Kent saying about the death of Lear, he hates him that would upon the rack of this tough world stretch him out longer. Now, I've said that as a torturer,
right.
But actually that's not how Kent said it.
Right.
Stretch him out longer has this terrible pun on the fact that when you were racked, you weren't taller, you were just longer. You weren't taller because you couldn't stand up.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's not, for me, quite enough variety of pace in the reading. We move now to Outside a German Wood, needs, I think, to be rather perfunctorily clipped.
We move now to Outside a German Wood.
That's a marvelous gesture, by the way, just moving the poem just from one place to another. A contemporary poet writing today would have just moved without saying we're going to move.
And then they'd have lost the move from moving to move.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that is these moving verse. I mean, it everything in the poem recurs in some terrible way. If you have something about an eye, you'll have something more about an eye. If you have something about something being deep, you'll have something different about being deep. It's really, I mean, it's very, very extraordinary.
Christopher Ricks, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Christopher Ricks is a professor of the humanities and co-director of the Editorial Institute at Boston University. His many books include True Friendship, Jeffrey Hill, Anthony Hecht, and Robert Lowell Under the Sign of Eliot and Pound. You can read many more poems by Anthony Hecht on our website and also listen to audio of him reading some of them. And you can read some of his uncollected poems in the September issue of Poetry Magazine and hear a few of them read on the Poetry Magazine podcast. Let us know what you think of this program. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.